The holidays are almost here. And if you still have names in your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that are meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists or small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers and sports fans to foodies, mixologists, gardeners, and even the morbid curious. So you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 back to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. I bought my girlfriend this awesome handcrafted nightlight for her office, which I'm super excited to watch her unwrap. And don't worry, she doesn't listen to this show. Something about, like, she already hears enough about me talking about ghosts at breakfast or something. I don't know. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/hauntings. That's uncommongoods.com/hauntings for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
The film begins in the office of FBI agent Wesley Doyle, played by Powers Booth, who's listening skeptically to a young man named Fenton Meeks, played by Matthew McConaughey, who tells him that his younger brother Adam is a notorious serial killer that newspapers have started calling the Hand of God Killer. Fenton says that Adam has committed suicide, which has led Fenton to fulfill a promise to bury his brother in a public rose garden in their hometown of Thurman, Texas. Doyle doesn't think much of Fenton's claims, but when he calls the Thurman Sheriff's Office, a deputy confirms that Fenton did steal an ambulance and his brother's body earlier that day. Fenton begins to tell Doyle about his childhood, and the scene flashes back to 1979, when Fenton and Adam live with their father, a local mechanic and widower, in a groundskeeper's cottage behind the Rose Garden. From Fenton's 10-year-old point of view, we learn of how he and his younger brother's normal childhoods were shattered on the day that their father, played by Bill Paxton, who also directs the film, experiences a vision from God during which he is chosen to be a slayer of demons. Fenton listens to this story skeptically, not much different from Agent Doyle in the present, while his father recounts how God's visions have presented him with his three murder weapons and a list of names of people to be hunted down as demons. The murder weapons are a steel pipe used to knock the victim unconscious, a pair of gloves which are worn leading up to the capture of the demon, and then once they're removed, he says, human touch reveals the demon's true nature. And then there's the axe with which to finish the job. While Fenton remains unconvinced, his younger and more impressionable brother Adam begins to believe their father's twisted mission of faith, murdering on orders from God. It's no surprise that Fenton is skeptical about his father's wild claims. I mean, who wouldn't be? But one thing is clear, his father truly believes he was sent on this mission from God, who showed him what he needs to do in his vision. And in that belief, the fictional character of Meeks is not alone. Throughout the centuries, there have been scores of people who believe they've received visions from God or some other higher power and have been sent on some sort of mission. In this case, though, it's not the funny mission from God like in the Blues Brothers. This is a mission that would have any sane person questioning the motives of their God. This was a mission to kill demons who are in disguise as people. Now, believe it or not, this isn't uncommon as you might hope it is. And the world can be a scary place. But how common is it to involve your children in your plans, to take them along on your murder spree as accomplices? I hate to say it, but it's happened at least once. And the murders that followed were so chilling that they managed to inspire Frailty, a terrifying film that has never gotten the attention that it truly deserves. The murderer in our story blamed his crimes on multiple entities who urged him to commit arson and then to kill everyone on Earth. And he took his 12-year-old son along for the ride. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of America. And welcome to the latest episode of Season 9, a season we call Based on a True Story. American Hauntings is written and performed by Troy Taylor, that's me, and is produced and co-hosted by Cody Back. And this season, we're bringing you some of the scariest and most unsettling films about ghosts, demons, murder, and mayhem that have ever been shown on the silver screen. But you can't watch any of them and say, it's only a movie. Every episode of this season offers the true story behind these horrifying films, stories that are usually much scarier than anything a movie studio can create. This is episode 24, the finale of season 9, and this one is Frailty. In the past on this episode, we've often asked the question of whether a monster is born or is a monster made. This might be the episode that finally answers that question. The story that follows suggests that monsters are not born, that they are made, often by the very people who were supposed to protect them. The life of Joseph Callinger reads like a case study on how killers are created. And it's also an example of how darkness can literally transfer from parent to child. Born on December 11, 1936 in Philadelphia, Joseph was the third in line of men who carried the same name. And, well, that's where the trouble started. His father, Joseph Lee Brenner Jr., basically pulled a disappearing act when little Joseph was just 2 years old. One day he was there, the next he was gone, leaving behind a wife and a child with no explanation and no support. Joseph's mother, Judith, found herself in an impossible situation. Single motherhood in the 1930s was extremely difficult, so she made the difficult decision to temporarily place her son in a Catholic orphanage while she figured out how to make ends meet. She dropped the boy off and never returned. Temporary had become permanent, so Joseph was put up for adoption. In 1938, Austrian immigrants Stephen and Anna Callinger met Joseph at the orphanage. They seemed friendly, caring, and able to provide the stable home that the little boy desperately needed. They were devout Catholics, strict but kind, and for the next 2 years, Joseph experienced something resembling a normal childhood. His last name was changed, and he became Joseph Callinger. But things became messy 2 years later when Judith resurfaced and started demanding compensation from the Callingers for adopting her son. Now, it wasn't out of love for her kid, though. It was greed. The Callingers refused to pay what amounted to a ransom for a child she'd already given up, and the adoption became final since she'd already forfeited her parental rights. With Judith out of the picture, Joseph's ordinary life continued, but it didn't stay ordinary for long. In 1941, when Joseph was 5, he overheard some neighborhood boys use the word fuck. Like any curious kid, he didn't understand what it meant and repeated it at home, and Stephen and Anna became unhinged. They grounded him for a week, and during that time, both parents took turns beating him with a leather belt and wooden spoon. Unfortunately, they never explained what the word meant or why he was being punished. And he soon learned that making mistakes in the Callinger home resulted in physical and emotional abuse, but with no explanation about why he was being punished. This became a theme for every interaction in the household. The beatings escalated to a level that can only be described as torture. Joseph was forced to kneel on jagged rocks and sandpaper. He was made to eat his own feces. He was locked in closets, starved, and when he was 6 years old, one of Stephen's beatings was so severe that Joseph required hernia surgery. When he was 8, he made the mistake of asking Anna if he could attend a class trip to the Philadelphia Zoo, and she hit him 4 times on the head with a hammer. A year later, when he was 9, he was sexually assaulted by a group of neighborhood boys. Between the abuse at home and the trauma he experienced outside of it, he never had the chance to develop any kind of normal social connections. And when Joseph turned his hatred for his parents, teachers, and other children inward, he began to show all the classic signs of a deeply damaged child. He became withdrawn and difficult to get along with. He had no real friends and no one at home he could trust. The incidents when he started acting out were small at first, but they soon escalated. When he didn't receive a birthday present, he cut up his classmates' coats. At 13, he cut a hole in his bedroom wall for sexual purposes, keeping pictures of naked men and women nearby along with a knife. The knife was there for a reason. He needed it to become aroused, and eventually he needed to stab or slash the pictures to achieve orgasm. Joseph also began stealing money from his parents, believing he could buy friendships by taking other kids to the movies. Each time he was caught, Stephen and Anna would force him to burn his hands on the stove as punishment. In 1949, he managed to persuade his parents to send him to summer camp for 2 weeks. Things didn't improve while he was away. Just 10 days after he returned home, he heard voices telling him to cut someone. He boarded a city bus with his knife, and when he saw a young boy getting off the bus and walking down a path into some woods, Joseph followed him. He approached the boy near a stream and threatened him with his knife, telling him to take off his pants. But when the boy did what he was told, Joseph didn't hurt him. He ran off into the trees instead. But that wasn't the end of it. He followed the same scenario 3 times in the next few months. And finally, the 3rd time, Joseph put the boy's penis in his mouth and bit it while holding the boy at knife point. Finally, at 15, Joseph found what he thought was love with a girl named Hilda Bergman. They met at the movies and continued to see each other for months. Well, they were soon having sex, which infuriated his devout Catholic parents. When they ordered him to stop seeing Hilda, Joseph made a decision that would define the rest of his life. He dropped out of school, moved into his own place, and then got a job at his father's shoe shop. It was a job that would later earn him the nickname, the Shoemaker. Now on his own, Joseph and Hilda's relationship grew more serious, and for the first time in his life, he'd started making friends. He discovered alcohol and began playing poker and pool with his buddies. And while it seems that Joseph's life finally had some normalcy, it should be noted that he was also still receiving messages from God at this time. His visions told him that God wanted him to heal people and to save them through their feet. You know, the shoe thing. Anyway, his parents didn't approve when Joseph and Hilda got married at 17. They had 2 children together, but within 3 years, Hilda left him. The official reason was another man, but the real reason was that Joseph had become physically violent toward her and their children. During the divorce proceedings, Joseph was hospitalized with severe headaches and loss of appetite. Doctors first suspected some sort of brain lesion, but then found no physical cause for his symptoms. They concluded that the stress of his divorce was making him physically ill. Within 7 months, Joseph was married again and would go on to have 5 more children with his second wife. His behavior began to deteriorate further, and he made dozens of trips to the hospital for memory loss, suicide attempts, and setting his own house on fire three separate times. In 1972, three of Joseph's children walked into the local police station and told officers about the abuse they'd been suffering from at the hand of their father. He'd built a punishment room in the basement, lit only by a kerosene lamp. He would take them there whenever an itch in his hand told him that they had misbehaved. Rope was kept in the room so that his victims could be restrained. Once they were tied up, they were beaten with shoe soles, leather straps, rubber hoses, and even a whip. His daughter, Mary Jo, endured this treatment five times a week between the ages of 10 and 13. Joseph had been forcing Mary Jo to pick winning horses for him to bet on at the racetrack. When the horses lost, she was punished. Once, while she was tied up, he held a knife to her throat and threatened to kill her if she moved. Another time, he pressed a heated spatula to her leg, leaving a permanent scar. The children were also, and you can tell me if this sounds familiar, forced to kneel on rocks and sandpaper and pray for hours at a time. He was now revisiting the sins of his own parents on his children. The entire family lived in constant fear. They were all in bed between 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock each night because they knew at least one of them would be dragged from bed at midnight for a trip to the basement. Hoping to escape from the brutal conditions, his son Joseph Jr. tried to run away from home, but his father chased after him with a gun, brought him back, tied him to a refrigerator, and was beaten on and off with a hammer for the next week. After the police arrested Joseph based on his children's accounts, they discovered he was hallucinating and having conversations with a disembodied head that he called Charlie that, of course, no one else can see. And he was still receiving visions from God. Psychological testing revealed Joseph was a paranoid schizophrenic with an IQ of 84. So it seemed that everything was in place to keep the man locked up or committed to an institution. But then his children recanted their allegations, and Joseph was released with only a recommendation that he be supervised when he was with his family. This was a turn of events that would be catastrophic. Shortly after his release, Joseph spun out of control. In July 1974, he attacked a 10-year-old boy named Jose Collazo. He tortured the child, cut off his genitals, and then killed him. Because there was no apparent connection between Joseph and Jose, the murder went unsolved, and Joseph remained free. Joseph then took out massive life insurance policies on all his sons. He'd had large policies on his home and other buildings he owned when he'd set them on fire, and since the company had paid out, he assumed it would be the same if anything happened to his children. When Joseph Jr. was found dead in an abandoned construction building, though, the insurance company found the death suspicious and refused to pay out. But by then, Joseph had found something more compelling than money. He found a willing accomplice. Joseph told his 13-year-old son, Michael, that he'd been sent on a mission from God to murder young boys and cut off their genitals, and he asked Michael for his help. His son eagerly agreed and became his father's partner in crime. Every twisted thought or sinister urge Joseph experienced, Michael seemed to share and enjoy. The darkness had passed to yet another generation. For 6 weeks in late 1974 and early 1975, Joseph and Michael terrorized people across Philadelphia, Baltimore, and New Jersey. They appeared at people's doors pretending to be salesmen, and once they got inside, they raped, robbed, and abused their victims. Joseph raped a New Jersey woman who was at home alone on November 24th. Another woman was forced to perform sexual acts on him at gunpoint a week later. They kidnapped four women in Pennsylvania who were raped and forced to turn over about $20,000 in cash and valuables. On January 8th, they interrupted a bridge game and found themselves with eight victims. Each person arrived one or two at a time, giving Joseph and Michael the opportunity to deal with them methodically. They ordered everyone to strip and bound them with electrical cords. When 21-year-old Maria Fashing, the last person to arrive, refused to follow Joseph's orders, he stabbed her in the neck and back. During the commotion, one victim managed to escape and scream for help, but by the time the police arrived, the Callengers had fled, using the city bus as their getaway vehicle and dumping their weapons and a bloody shirt along the way. Thanks to eyewitness reports and the discovery of the discarded bloody shirt, the police were soon on Joseph and Michael's trail. They found out about Joseph's history of domestic violence, his son's unsolved death, and the series of fires that occurred at properties he owned. Joseph was charged with three counts of murder for Jose Collazo, Joseph Jr., and Maria Fashing. He offered an insanity plea, claiming that God told him to kill. At trial, the jury found him sane, and he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole on October 14, 1976. It had taken the jury less than an hour to reach their verdict. Michael, meanwhile, was determined to be under his father's control and so was sentenced to a reformatory until he became an adult. Upon his release at 21, he moved out of state, changed his name, and disappeared into history. While in prison, Joseph made several suicide attempts, including trying to set himself on fire. Because of the suicide attempts and the other violent behavior, he was later transferred to a mental hospital in Trenton, New Jersey, and then on to another hospital in Philadelphia. It was there where he tried to kill two fellow inmates in unprovoked attacks, but both survived. Joseph Callengers died of heart failure in 1996 at the age of 59, having spent his last 11 years on suicide watch and at least five of those in solitary confinement. Before his death, Joseph had been interviewed by Geraldo Rivera, and he admitted that he still had a desire to kill people. When Geraldo said to him that he hoped he would never get out of prison, Joseph responded with six words: "I hope I never do either." If you've never had the chance to see Frailty, then you need to run, not walk, to your favorite streaming device and watch it immediately. It remains one of my favorite films of the early 2000s, and it's one of those movies that I've probably seen a dozen times that I wish I could go back and watch it for the first time again. The events of the film, as well as an incredible twist, are something that I can't do justice to here on this podcast, so I'm urging you to watch it if you haven't. The film stars a young Matthew McConaughey, who at that point in his career was probably best known for his rom-coms like The Wedding Planner or in supporting roles in films like Dazed and Confused and U-571. He hadn't yet achieved the career level of True Detective, Interstellar, Dallas Buyers Club, or even The Lincoln Lawyer. Bill Paxton, who'd already starred in Twister, A Simple Plan, Aliens, Apollo 13, and, of course, as Morgan Earp in Tombstone, originally came as an actor on the project, but was so impressed with the script by Brent Hanley that he wanted to do more than just play dad in the film. He was also afraid of what the wrong director would do with the already edgy material, possibly turning the slow-burn thriller into a simple slasher, that he decided to take the reins of director himself. Frailty is an unnerving film, and Bill Paxton plays the simple yet touched-by-God mechanic with such level-headed sincerity that you'll question pretty much everything you see on screen, asking yourself if they're really on a mission from God and truly killing demons. The script, along with great performances, maintains the tension that's finally released in the third act when the truth is revealed. Matthew McConaughey is excellent in the film. His cold as ice performance, which would return in True Detective, and actually maybe even more chilling here, helps make this film as good as it is. The real brilliance of Frailty is how it plays with blind faith, indoctrination, and radicalization, since the children, and we as the audience, don't really know if their dad has gone insane or if he's truly been instructed to kill by God. One of the boys begins to believe, but the other does not, knowing there's something inherently wrong with the whole thing. On a mission, he refuses to kill the demon, which causes him to fall out of favor with his father and drives a wedge between himself and his brother, which disrupts the family unit. The film was not only inspired by the crimes of Joseph Callinger, but it also serves as a metaphor for generational trauma and the hate and biases that are all instilled in us growing up, passed down from one generation to another. Paxton's character essentially works to radicalize his sons, who are expected to believe his story with blind faith and against all logic and morality. There's a need in all of us to want to please our parents and to make them proud. As children, we look up to them and look to them for direction. We go to them for help and advice and often to steer us the right way. But what if your parents announce to you that you and your family have accepted a mission from God to kill demons? Or maybe your father tells you that God wants you to kill children and cut off their genitals. What do you do then? Well, that's an unsettling question to go along with an unsettling film. Thanks again for listening to American Hauntings, and we hope you'll stay with us for the postmortem section of the episode. It's coming right up after these messages from our sponsors.
Okay, listen. It is time. If you are looking for a sign, this is it. 2026 is the year you launch your business. The year you transform into an entrepreneur, a founder, a boss. One powerful move puts your future firmly in your hands. Starting a business with Shopify. Maybe you've got an idea you can't shake. A craft that everyone tells you to sell. A store you've already designed in your head. With Shopify, 2026 is when you finally make it happen. Millions of entrepreneurs have already made this leap. From household names to first-time business owners just getting started. Shopify has been my go-to for selling ghost shirts, pizza merch, and numerous other past projects. And there's a good reason. Shopify gives you all the tools to easily build your dream store. Choose from hundreds of beautiful templates that you can customize to match your brand. Setup is fast with Shopify's built-in AI tools that write product descriptions and headlines and help you edit product photos. Marketing is built in too. Create email and social campaigns that reach customers wherever they scroll. As you grow, Shopify grows with you. Handle more orders, expand to new markets, and do it all from the same dashboard. In 2026, stop waiting and start selling with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/hauntings. Go to shopify.com/hauntings. That's shopify.com/hauntings. Hear your first this new year with Shopify by your side. Are you stressed? Have restless nights? Racing thoughts? We've all been there. Imagine having a natural way to feel calmer, sleep better, and bring more balance into your day. That's exactly what CBD can do. And when it comes to CBD, nobody does it better than CBDFX. CBDFX has been around since 2014, and they're one of the most trusted CBD companies out there. Every product is made right here in the USA with organic hemp, no GMOs, no pesticides, and no harmful chemicals. Plus, everything is backed by third-party lab reports, so you know it's pure, safe, and effective. They've got something for everyone, from sleep gummies and tinctures to CBD capsules, topicals, and even CBD treats for your pets. So it's easy to find the perfect fit for you. Their products have become part of my daily routine, and honestly, they just help calm my nerves. Improving sleep has led to so many other benefits. I can think more clearly. I have more energy. The podcast is is better, probably, maybe, I think it is. You tell me. I've spoken before about my personal favorite, the CBD and CBN night capsules for sleep, which help you fall asleep quickly and sleep soundly through the night. They contain CBN, cannabis oil, commonly known as the ultimate relaxation cannabinoid, and other natural sleep aids. They're vegan, gluten-free, and made with organic hemp. So whether you want calm, focus, better sleep, or just an overall wellness boost, CBDFX has something for you. And right now, our listeners can get 40% off of your first order with code HAUNTINGS at CBDFX.com. That's CBDFX.com. Use promo code HAUNTINGS and get 40% off today. Feel the difference with CBDFX.
You the agent in charge of the case?
That's right. What can I do for you?
I'm here because I can't live with what I know anymore. Listen, this may sound a little bit crazy, but I know who the Godsend Killer is.
What makes you think that?
You hadn't even heard me out yet, and already you doubt me.
They were raised to obey their father.
Go to Sahoma.
To love him. To trust him.
Night, boys. Sleep tight.
Don't let those bed bugs bite.
Until...
Wake up. I've got something to tell you.
What's wrong?
There are demons among us. I can see the demons while other people can.
I'm scared, Dad.
Nothing that crazy could be real.
The angel told me that God would be sending weapons.
Maybe you just dreamed it. Maybe you're not right in the head.
God will be sending a list of the first seven demons.
These are people's names.
And they'll look like people. They're not.
Dad made up this whole thing. Do you understand?
Well, if it has to be done, it has to be done.
Is that true?
Why would I make it up?
It's all a big lie. I don't want to run away.
You are hiding something from me.
What is it you think I'm hiding?
When I lay my hands on them, I'll reveal them for what they truly are.
I got a pretty good idea of them bodies are.
I'll tell.
Craziest thing I've heard in a long time.
Check the rose garden.
I don't believe a word of it.
But it's true.
Bill Paxton.
Those were demons. Why can't you see that?
Matthew McConaughey.
Tell me the truth.
Sometimes truth defies reason.
You're crazy!
Only demons should fear me. You're not a demon, are you?
I don't know. It's my friend, producer, sidekick, and code who... Sorry, he got. I looked at you and started laughing.
I couldn't help it. It was great.
Yeah. All right. Let me just pick it up with. Okay. Now I got to do it again.
Okay.
Just the second paragraph. All right.
Just don't look at me, and I won't look at you.
I know. My name is Troy Taylor, and I'm the guy who narrates and writes the show. And across from me is the guy who keeps asking me if I can also hear those voices. I don't know. Anyway, it's my friend, producer, sidekick, and co-host, Cody Beck.
All right, I can look up now. I can look now.
Yes.
Oh
yes.
Boy. Yeah.
We had to try that a couple of times because we started laughing. So
it's funny. It's funny. Troy, I'm telling you, do you know the first thing I'm going to do tomorrow after work? I'm going to make Brooke rewatch this movie with me because holy shit.
I know. I just watched it over the weekend. Well, we had a snow day. A small business Saturday was a complete disaster.
I know, man.
So bad. So we ended up just staying home and I watched this and I said, "Hey, I want to watch this again because it's, you know, we're doing it for our season finale here." And Sam had never seen it. So I showed it to her. She's like, "Oh my God, this is really good." I said, I know, right? And, you know, it's, you know, the twists and turns in this thing. I mean, it's like a double twist ending, which I'm not giving away, but
it is. We can't talk about this movie very much because
I know that's why I kind of steered out of it.
With
the story is I just kept saying, listen, that's all I'm going to say. Cause if you haven't seen this, you have to see it. I mean, this is not like some of the other ones that we've done this season. Like, oh yeah, it's an okay movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, God, they can't all be the lighthouse, you know. yeah. But, you know, this one is one that I just, I don't want to give it away. I just don't.
I text Charlie Brockus and Jack Brockus. We have a group text. I think I told you about it. It's called Mommy, which was very confusing for a long time.
Very confusing.
That's why people are like, why is, was your mother's name Cynthia Holloway in your phone? I was like, well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I text them, but then that was just, I watched the movie, but I hadn't done my outline yet. And then I started hearing about Charlie in here a little bit. and so it's like, Charlie, you have to watch this movie now and see what's up. I think this is going to be one of my favorite finales because of how epic the movie is and because how crazy the story is and the things we have to talk about and unpack with this. That's all
everything
it's
about
all pushed
it
into
is,
one.
I know everything about it is insane.
Yes.
But yeah, this is definitely one of the better movies, I think, of the season of our 24 episodes. I think this is one of the better ones.
This is one of the best movies I think I've seen.
It's always been on one of my top 10 lists anyway. Definitely top 10s out of the early 2000s for sure.
So. Yes. And it's amazing. And we will get to that. I do want to say I love that this is our finale simply because I've been moving. As Troy, Troy, you commented earlier, my facial hair, it is I've just let it go because of the cold outside. It started snowing like crazy the last few days.
I know.
Which has been beautiful. I had also a family member that was going through some medical things. I want to say she's doing a lot better. So thank you all for kind of rolling with those punches until she gets the next hip replaced. And then we'll see how that goes. But I've been working with our rep over at Shopify for all the Patreon stuff. We're making some new products. Troy doesn't even know this. We're making some new products. And also just there's so many things where there's a shirt and they're like, well, we don't make this type of shirt anymore. And what I do is I upload art, I choose a shirt. And then if they go, hey, we don't have a shirt anymore, then they send me an email and I'm like, okay, well, let me move the same art to
Different shirt. Right.
But I'm sending everybody everything at this point, just for supporting the show. And we really appreciate all that.
Awesome.
And speaking, can I move on to some of our patrons or do we have stuff to talk about?
Well, we got upcoming events here. We do have some stuff that I wanted to get out there. I mean, since this is our finale, I feel like I need to unpack
several
things here coming up. So, speaking of top 10 lists, of course, on the 16th of December, we will be, putting out our annual, movies of the year episode, our horror films of the year, which was fun. There were some good ones this year. A lot of them were earlier in the year, but there've been a couple that have been,
it was a little
good, a few disappointments that I expected more out of. I'll just say that it starts with 28, and we'll leave it at that. Very disappointed, but it is what it is. But yeah, they can't all be winners, as we know.
It's like male zombie nudity, like a lot.
Well, that wasn't even the part that bothered me. It was
it didn't bother me.
Coherent storyline that
it was just a
me,
lot.
It was a lot.
You know what I'm saying?
Everything about that movie was a lot. Anyway, so right now, there's a couple things here. Right now, through December 14th, we have our annual holiday sale going on. That means you get 20% off any of the upcoming dinner and spirits events that I'll be hosting in the new year. And I would love to encourage you to skip the ordinary gifts this year and treat the spooky people on your list to an experience instead of just something that they're going to forget about or put aside.
Yeah.
These events are held at the American Oddities Museum. They include dinner and an evening of eerie tales, haunted history, true crime, and the unexplained. All you have to do is go to the website at dinnerandspirits.com and use the promo code HOLIDAY when you check out. And this discount is good for any of the dinner and spirits events only. So just remember that the sale ends on December 14th. So book that now. Give them a night that they can talk about after the holidays are over. Then coming up on December 13th, which is the day before the sale ends, will be the last day that the American Oddities Museum will be open to the public at the Mineral Springs in Alton. We're closing after that. We have a private event on the 14th, and then we'll be closing. And when we will reopen at our new location on January 17th. So stop by. It's your last chance this coming weekend and on the 13th. your last chance to see our Mineral Springs location. I will be there all day on the 13th, signing any last minute holiday books that you want or whatever. And I think we can all just say goodbye to a place where, well, we've been doing events since the 1990s.
Yeah.
So it's been a very long time. So also, I know we'll talk some more about this coming up in our next episode. We'll talk more about the Dead of Winter event. We'll plug that at our last one because I want to get everybody to jump on that. We are starting to kind of fill up some of those ticketed after hour events like the St. Louis Exorcism Dinner. We got the Black Mirror Workshop and the Ghost Hunt at Franklin Lodge. This is our 26th annual food drive.
Wow.
So we don't want you guys to miss it. Remember that the daytime event is free and it's going to be held at Franklin Lodge in Alton up on Washington Avenue. There'll be speakers, presenters, ghosts and hauntings all day long. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then finally, last thing, be sure to check out the website for the 2026 Haunted America Conference because it's now up and running and it's got this year's roster of speakers and presenters, the after hour events, the tours, the ghost hunts, the workshops, everything you need to know. And then on December 8th, the vendor spaces for 2026 go on sale. If you're thinking about being a vendor, they do always get snapped up quickly. So if you're planning on that, don't wait too long to get that booked. And general admission tickets for the conference, they go on sale starting January 12th. So that will be, I know, after the first of the year. I know it's coming up fast.
It's so soon.
I know. So anyway, you can find your way to everything we offer. Dinners, tours, Dead of Winter, Museum, Haunted America Conference. Everything is at AmericanHauntings.net. And please don't snooze on that sale because we only do that once a year. So if you are wanting to attend any of those upcoming events, it's a chance to do it for a slightly discounted price.
So, yes.
Anyway, there we go.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. You rolled through that and so many good things, so many cool things come, so many new things, you know?
Yeah, we do. We have a lot. We're working on a lot of new stuff. You're working on new shirts. We're going to be working on other stuff too. That's going to be coming up and, I've got new dinners. I mean, ones that I've never done before, brand new ones that we've added to the schedule for the spring. And boy, the new location is going to be a lot of fun.
So 100%.
Yeah, we move on the 20th. It's going to be a nightmare. No, it's really not. It's really not. But we are going to get everything moved. It's the week before that I have to pack it all is the part I'm dreading.
Dude,
it's not the... Yeah, it's not the move. The move is going to be great because a lot of friends and supporters and stuff are going to be there to help us move. That's not the part that I'm dreading. I'm not even dreading the putting it all back together again. I like that.
That's kind of fun.
It's the packing part that I hate.
Yes.
But it's got to be done, obviously. So,
well, anyway. And speaking of new things and dreading things, we still have a American Dread, the first podcast we've launched on the network. So check that out with Adam. That's usually released on the Wednesday of the opposite week where we put in an episode on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
So it should be the week after this one because this one.
Yes. We just put one out
Tuesday and then yes. And then every Friday, of course, is American Nightmares.
Yeah, so we're rocking
and rolling. I have too much to say that I can't wait another week.
Yeah, so. And he and Troy knows my mental health and my heart just they hurt so much sometimes that I'm like I can't do this one with you, buddy. I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, it's all right. Lets me ramble on about whatever, and then that people can either like it or not like it. But you know, it seems to be. So far, of course, I haven't read any of the reviews. So,
you leave that to me.
They may suck. I don't know, but I'm having fun doing it because it's stuff I don't normally get to do. So
I love it, though. You leave that as my 3 a.m. activity when I can't sleep, and I'll be going through looking at stats and making graphs and checking out comments. But anyway, but hey, I love all that. I want to give a quick shout out to our latest subscribers on Patreon. So thank you so much for supporting the show to Stacy, Robin, Tanya, Travis, Tina, Linz Marie, Angie, Edward, Jennifer, and Robin again. So thank you very much for supporting the show. We've got a lot of stuff going on there. Troy's got some cool stuff.
We do. Yeah. The Patreon program just keeps, because I needed one more podcast to write.
Of course.
So now it's like three at a time, but we do have five seasons of an alternative podcast on there for you to binge. Normally, these podcasts seem to be things that maybe, well, you know, like the Albert Fish season.
Yeah.
Perhaps not for general consumption.
So, don't let your children listen to it.
No, we tend to kind of steer this towards a little on the stranger side. But we do have a new season that's running now. Episode 6 goes up, I think, next week. And this one's of the Stark Rock Murders. So this one has been pretty popular so far. I've been pleased with the amount of feedback I've gotten on it, because I wasn't sure how it was going to go. But it was one that, after the guy who went to prison for it died, it was time to put this thing out. So anyway, we offer that alternative podcast. So then you'll have four to listen to from us, which is maybe four too many. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But we do those every other week. And it kind of in between the runs of this regular show. And you guys check it out. I mean, it's only, if you just think, hey, you know what, for $5 a month, I mean, you can't even buy a cup of coffee for that.
Can't even.
$5 a month, you can get another podcast that is just for, a select group of people, no ads, nothing like that. Just go to patreon.com/AmericanHauntings.
Basically what Troy is so lovingly trying to tell you is you don't have to hear me at all, because I do 80% of the ads.
Most of them, but then there's also the Burger King ads and everything else that gets mixed in.
The Taco
we get all
Bells.
These I'll have something I'm like, what? And then I'm like, oh yeah, this is they filled this in.
Yes,
I'm like, it's one thing when your voice comes on, I expect it, but then when I get something comes on for
Burger King
and and you're like, what
yes. And Troy's like, you made a deal with Burger King, Cody, and you didn't clue me in.
Right.
Like, no, we would be getting Whoppers. But I want to give a shout out to somebody that left us a good review on Apple Podcasts on iTunes, so thank you very much.
Made that sound like the one person that left us a good review compared to all the other ones, but go ahead.
L. Tompkins. Yeah, thanks. We finally got one. So it's from L. Tompkins, and it's titled To Future Cody and Troy. It says, hey guys, I haven't reviewed until now because I'm spending too much time listening and catching up. I found you initially going down to the Chicago Underground rabbit hole. I grew up in Calumet City, is that it? And lived in northern Michigan now, or live in northern Michigan now, but I love the history of Illinois and Indiana. As such an important Midwest influence. I love seeing and hearing the good and bad truthful stories of areas around my family's hometowns, especially Crown Point and the Dillinger Jail that Troy has mentioned. Please keep up the great work, and I look forward to making a trip down maybe in 2026 to visit the conference in Alton. Thanks, Lindsay. Well, thank you very much. That's great.
Thank you. That's great. Yeah. So if you do leave us a review, just like that one, we'll be reading at least one review during each postmortem episode. If we read yours, I will send you something cool in the mail.
Yes.
So if you heard your review, text me your address on the hotline at 217-791-7859. And I will get that out to you.
Yes.
I'm not always speedy, but it will be coming.
Yes. We appreciate our listeners, and we will send you stuff.
Yes, we will. We will.
Okay, you ready to dive into this episode?
Sure. Yeah.
Did you see? Okay, so I believe this pops up in the film. I can't remember, or if I was just looking at IMDb, I got a little confused. But have you seen the tagline that just says "No soul is safe"? Because I love that.
Oh yeah, I like that. But no, I don't think I saw that one.
So I don't know where that popped up, but I wrote it down and I said that's kind of also a joke about our listeners. Like, I guess we could say it's like no true. Soul is safe if you're listening. there's some as above, so below. Fear ye all who would, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this started out pretty quick, and you mentioned it, and there's a couple quotes from your episode that I do still want to talk about, which is basically born versus made. The life of Joseph Callinger reads like a case study on how killers are created, and it's also an example of how darkness can literally transfer from parent to child. And this episode just has it all, like everything we've talked about. I feel
has a lot of stuff in it that we've talked about.
Yeah,
right.
With killers, with evil, with things gone wrong. I think it really kind of depends on my age, which way I might have might have been able to go depending on growing up, you know, depending on how bad my parents were. So Joseph gets adopted. Mom eventually shows up and wants money from the Callenders for adopting her son. All I could say about this lady, piece of work, Troy.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
What a
right?
piece I know. Of work.
I know. Yeah. She just, you know, walks out one day, drops him off at an orphanage and peace out. And yeah. then once she finds out he got adopted, you know, uh-huh. then she shows up. Yeah.
What a piece of work.
I know. And
Joseph eventually gets beaten for using the word fuck, which.
Yeah.
Holy yeah. shit.
And we are talking about like the 1930s.
Here, I know.
It's not like it's, you know, it's not like you turn on the TV and heard it on there. You know, it was yes. something that he heard, you know, out on the street kind of thing.
Well, that's so. That makes me even wonder, though, like when did the parents start to realize that this is a bad word? And then also, I mean, I know that they have a lot of issues, but never telling them what the problem is or why they're even doing this or what the thing is. And it reminds me a lot of some of the Carl Panzeram things where it's uh-huh. kind of just you're screwed yeah. from the start and yeah. get into yeah. some abusive systems and things. And then there's the sexual abuse and everything that starts to then tie in.
Yeah, it's all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's got to be, I guess, about control and controlling violence and controlling right. extreme situations.
Right. Somebody who's been put into a situation where they have absolutely no control over what's happening to them, don't even understand what's happening to them mm-hmm. most of the time, because, again, like you said, they're being punished. He's being punished for things that, you know, he doesn't even know what he did wrong sometimes, you know, or at least, again, here's the only thing, though.
Sure.
And you got to keep in mind. And we talked about this in another episode, and I don't even remember exactly which one it was. But you have to remember that we're hearing all this from him. Mm-hmm. This is from his point of view.
Yeah.
So while it's probably as messed up as this dude is, it's probably pretty accurate. But on the other hand, we'll never know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what happened, you know, it's hard to say, but I mean, there were records and things as far as the adoptions and the hospitals and that kind of thing. But I mean, this dude was, you know, I just said he began to show all the classic signs of a deeply damaged child.
Yeah. Man,
no kidding.
Yeah. So. And I'll also just double down on that. It's like, it's pretty much 1% sympathy for this man and then 99%.
Right. Oh,
like,
I know.
No, sorry. Know. Sorry, dude. But, yeah. but I think it's important to learn how, or to talk about how do people get to this point?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, stealing money to go out with his friends to take him to the movies, thinking he can buy friendship.
Sure.
And then his parents saying, you know, burn your hands on the stove. And again, we're taking everything you said with a big grain of salt. But I'm thinking.
Well, but still, I'm going to say I think probably most of this probably did happen.
And I'm thinking about the rascal kind of stuff that I did, you know, back in the day. If I knew the potential consequences were like this level of violence, I don't know if I would have ever left the house at all.
I know, right? Right. I know.
That's crazy. And then, like I said, sexual abuse and things are clearly getting tied up into this. There's no surprise. But then there seems to be a glimmer of hope, I guess, when he meets Hilda. And
yeah, they get at first.
At first. Yeah. And then you add the drinking. And apparently this is when he's been making friends, but also hearing the voice of God.
Right. Right.
And this is very much a Seinfeld joke, but it was pretty much anytime you hear God, you either wind up in the Bible or in the nut house. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It always reminds me of, like, there was a quote from an X-Files episode where Mulder says something about, you know, it's perfectly normal if we talk to God, but if God talks to us, then we need to be locked up. You know,
about that. Yeah.
Same kind of thing. You know,
that is a very interesting distinction.
Yeah. Since the Old Testament, God has done a lot of talking to yes. people that I'm aware of anyway.
Yeah.
Watch this movie or read this story about Joseph Callender. So,
Yeah. And you know, but I mean, is it any surprise though? Because the stories where God was talking to people usually asked him to do some pretty fucked up stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. We're going to let the whole world drown, but I'm going to need you to build this boat.
Yeah. I need you to kill your kid.
Anyway. Oh, yeah. That's an even better one. Oh, yeah. Because it reminded me of. That was brought up in the movie. Yeah.
Right. Right. Divorces, starts to spiral as he remarries, has five more children. So man's got seven kids at this point. You said, and I'm going to just a couple more quotes because I think they really kind of help sum up a lot of the episode is after the police arrested Joseph based on his children's accounts, they discovered he was hallucinating, having conversations with the disembodied head that he called Charlie that no one else could see. He was also, of course, still receiving visions from God. Psychological testing revealed Joseph was a paranoid schizophrenic with an IQ of 84. So it seemed that everything was in place.
But see, I'm not buying that.
Okay. Tell me.
Paranoid schizophrenic part. I get that. I don't believe I'm convinced that he somehow tweaked that IQ test.
You think he was that smart?
There is
that he
no
did that?
Way this guy had an IQ of 84.
He was calculated.
I just don't believe it.
He was calculated.
Too clever, too calculating, too, you know, I just don't believe it. I don't buy that. Now, if you'd have told me 184, yeah, I mean, that's awfully high. I'd make him a genius, but I'd be more inclined to believe that than 84.
Well, I think
I just don't believe this guy had a double digit IQ. I just don't believe it. So.
I believe you too, because you also mentioned then his children recanted their allegations. Joseph was released. The only recommendation that he be supervised when he was with his family. And so this is either him manipulating people, which I think is definitely a possibility. And then, loving what you know and knowing what you love is kids being like, oh God, is it worse with dad here? Or is it worse with dad
gone? I know.
Gone?
Well,
and that's heartbreaking.
Right. Yeah. And you're also talking about a time when, you know, the things were different as far as, you know, mental treatment and that kind of thing. I mean, you know, this was an era where they were just getting ready to the part where or to the point where they're just going to start just drugging people and parking them in hallways.
Yeah, yeah.
In the state hospitals, you know, before they became over bloated and run down and then started closing them in the 80s. So this is just a little prior to that. And, you know, the fact that he managed to get out just tells me that nobody was paying that much attention.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they probably just thought, well, here's a guy who's, you know, who's nuts. We'll just make sure he stays on his medication and we'll supervise, you know, anytime he's with his family. And I guarantee he walked out the door. It was the last time anybody thought about it.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Until he started to do something much worse.
Yes. So. This is the portion that I've called shit escalates. This is when he starts killing people, and unfortunately, I'm guessing an impressionable young. He's a kid. He's 13. Michael is down to help.
Oh yeah,
and
that's wild. I'm sure that he wore that kid down and manipulated him just the same way that Dad did in Frailty with Adam.
Yeah.
You know, convinced him that he was on a mission from God. And, you know, as I said earlier, not like the fun Blues Brothers kind
of
mission from God.
I did like
told him all this stuff. But and I'm sure this was not a one time conversation. I'm sure it was, you know, something that he really wore him down with.
Yeah.
He brainwashed him into believing it.
Yes. You know? And I think it's probably also there's some part of, okay, Dad and I have a special bond, or maybe I get treated better.
Yeah, seven kids.
Yeah, I get treated better. I get beat less, you know? If I go along with this.
And now he's something special.
Yes.
Because Dad chose him.
Mm-hmm. And you when know, Dad probably, is choosing people, yeah.
Right, probably knowing he was the easiest one to get to.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm sure that's, you know, what I suspect.
It's just my dad and I took a road trip to Colorado one time and just nothing like that happened. So I can't imagine.
Well, that's good to know.
Yes, thank you.
That makes me feel better to know that.
This 6 weeks though, like they just terrorize people across I mean that whole New England area.
States. At least that whole area. Jersey, Baltimore, Philadelphia, all that area right there, just showing up at people's doors and pretending to be salesmen just to get inside. And they started, you know, raping and robbing people.
It's really the worst. It's the worst of the worst. I mean, just you add insult to injury and this and that and torture and prolong just because you can sort of thing.
But didn't kill anybody until that bridge game with the eight victims who kept showing up one or two at a time, which, when I thought about that, it made me think of Richard Speck, you know, with the nurses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like one or two at a time. And then he'd tie him up, put him in the bedroom. And then, you know, then the last girl that shows up and then won't go along. And that's when he snaps.
That's when he escalates to when things don't start to go his way, then he turns it up.
But on the other hand, just to show you how fucking crazy this guy is and his kid, they decide to use a city bus as their getaway vehicle.
Yeah. What the hell is that?
I don't know. And you got to figure they've probably got blood all over them.
Exactly.
They're carrying knives and stuff. And then they're tossing the stuff in garbage cans along the way as they take the city bus back to their hideout.
That was the very first thing I thought of because I lived in New York for about a year. And granted, very, very different time. But I still wonder how much is turn your head the other way versus like,
oh, yeah,
what the hell?
I mean, right. Well, but on the other hand, though, maybe not, because that's how they found them so easy.
That's true.
Because of this bus ride. You know, they quickly found the discarded shirt and they found this guy. They started checking it out and they found out all the other stuff about him. And that's when they grabbed him.
You know? Yeah. It is very much, I don't want anything to do with this, but also, somebody's going to step up and say something. Yeah. This is just,
In the insanity plea, I mean, he entered as an insanity plea, but as far as the jury was concerned, I mean, he knew what he was doing. And see, that's the difference. I mean, he could be nuttier than a fruitcake, but if he knew what he was doing was wrong when he did it, that's all the criteria you need to lock this person up and not in a mental hospital and send him to prison, you know, where he continued to act like a maniac.
But then also like with the suicide attempt, including setting himself on fire. Is that for or against his insanity plea? Because holy shit.
I don't know. That's a good question. But yeah, it's not the way I'd want to go.
No, because
no thanks. I think more disturbing, then he spends years in suicide watch and solitary confinement and dies at 59.
Yeah.
Good riddance, I think that the really scary part, or at least the uncomfortable part about this is the authorities deciding that Michael was under his father's control. So they locked him up for a few years in a reformatory. And then when he got out at 21, he just disappeared.
Yeah.
So
what do you make of that?
Dad died in 1996 and this was the 70s. He's still alive.
Probably. He's out there.
He's out there somewhere, you know, and hopefully, you know, for his sake, I hope that, you know, and there's no record that he's the one who, you know, used the knife on anybody. But on the other hand, it depends on how deep he was under his father's control.
Right.
We'll probably never know for sure what happened.
Yeah.
But I'd like to hope that maybe he, you know, got his act together. I don't know.
Yes.
You know, it's hard to say.
And I couldn't
leave out the part about Geraldo Rivera.
I didn't get to watch. I didn't have time to watch this yet, but I'm doing it right after this while I'm editing.
I interviewed him and he said that he still wanted to kill people and including Geraldo. That was my favorite part, you know, because I'm like, on that one, I don't know. Do we call him crazy? But he said, he never got out of prison. And then the guy says, Joseph says, yeah, I hope I never do either. Well, that's okay.
You're just still mad about Geraldo for the Al Capone safe.
I am still mad. Actually, you know what? I'm less mad about the vault. Don't get me wrong. There was no way he could know what was in there.
No, of course.
And actually, except for that part, it's not it wasn't a bad special.
I haven't seen the whole thing.
It's actually pretty good. I mean, it's a nice history thing about Capone and stuff. And, you know, and listen, I probably would have fallen for that one too. Yeah, know? Why not? I mean,
he's got a huge chance. Yeah.
I'm still don't like Geraldo because of all his satanic panic shows.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's
where I have a difference of opinion with good old Geraldo and Sally Jesse Raphael and Oprah and everybody else who stoked that crap. But tune into my other podcast, American Nightmares, to hear more about that in the near future. So
that's beautiful. And yeah, I hope I never do either. What a hell of a line. Okay. How, you got more about the movie? How do we talk about this movie aside?
I know we can't. Well, that's all we can do. All I could do is say that, go see it. And, I talked a little bit about Matthew McConaughey because, prior to this, except for a few things that he had done prior to this, he was just making rom-coms. And I've seen an interview with him where he was offered like buttloads of money to keep doing rom-coms, and he turned it down because he wanted to do something else.
Yeah.
And he's really good in this. I mean, he's very, I find him to be very True Detective-y in this one.
It's that.
You know, it's also, very it's, cold and very calculating.
It's True Detective meets Usual Suspects, Kaiser Soze.
Yeah, type. Yeah. Except we can't say much else about
it. I know. You're right. You're right.
Bill Paxton is great in it, which you know how much I love Bill Paxton. Yeah. Although it's so funny because we went to see the new Predator movie, The Badlands.
I haven't seen Badlands,
which was really good. Yes. And so we were kind of working our way. I don't know how this happened. We're working our way backwards. So I rewatched Predators, the one with Adrian Brody.
Yeah, I know Atlanta, very well. I
love that one. And so we watched that. And then I told Sam, I said, you know what? Let's watch. Have you ever seen Predator 2? Which is kind of my favorite because
I love it.
It's the one that creates the mythology of the Predators. Because
when he's on the ship and sees.
But they're on a hunting trip. It's, in the first one, it's just a
random,
over steroided, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with a lot of 80s action lines. I ain't got time to bleed,
the guns that they put together.
Jesse Ventura and it's
beautiful.
It's a fun movie for what it is, but it's that one. It's the one with Danny Glover and Bill Paxton.
Yes.
That really creates the mythology of the Predators, which they continue on in like Alien versus Predator.
Yes.
The first one. I just pretend like the second one doesn't exist because it's so terrible.
Is it Requiem? Is that the
one? That one's really bad. So we watched Predator 2 and she's like, so I thought you like Bill Paxton, right? And I said, yeah. She goes, but he's not a very good actor. And I said, well, not in this.
He's a little cheesy
in this one. Yes.
When he's following him around the precinct and yelling stuff. Yeah.
It's a little corny. But the whole thing is on like, I don't know, man. All I can think of when I watch that movie is everyone in it seems like they have done like four rails of coke before every scene.
They're so high
and so like, the whole time that you're like, guys, everybody take a breath. Calm down.
Well, do you remember even in the very beginning though, when the bad guys, they're doing the shootout, they run upstairs. I think one man does slam his face into a bag of cocaine and then start shooting.
He does.
Yes.
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder about what exactly was going on. The other funny thing about it is to see how Lethal Weapon-y that movie is. The first one. I mean, not only is it Danny Glover, but you also had their captain who plays the head of the SWAT team.
Yes.
And of course, Gary Busey.
Yeah. And Gary Busey's
pre-crazy Gary Busey.
Well, yeah.
Well, okay. He's still crazy, but not like after.
He's not on Twitter.
It's the post motorcycle accident Gary Busey that things really spin out of control. He's just kind of crazy in an actory kind of way.
Yes.
In like Lethal Weapon and in this.
Yeah.
But he's super over the top. Everything is in this movie. So yeah, I don't think you can judge Bill Paxton from Predator 2.
No. Sam, you can't do that.
I mean, he's Apollo 13, Simple Plan. Twister.
Exactly. Tombstone,
you know,
exactly.
Big Love. You got to go. But that's the Bill Paxton that we know and love.
Well,
who died way too soon.
I know.
But he's great in this. And he was just supposed to be playing the dad, who has no name, by the way.
I'm sure yes.
You noticed that.
Yes.
He's just supposed to be playing the dad. But he read the script and was afraid that somebody would turn it into a slasher film. Ooh. And he convinced them to let him direct it. First film he'd ever directed.
Directorial debut.
And so it was, you know, he's so good in this. I mean, he's so sincere,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, he's like this wide eyed, you know, I'm here on a mission. This is real. You know, I know what you're saying. You know, Fenton, but this is real, you know.
I believe him. Like, you know, well,
that's the thing. That's what makes it so chilling is that, you know, you look and you see, I mean, it's a film about being indoctrinated and radicalized, mm-hmm. you know, your kids, but we don't really know if dad's nuts or if he's really on a mission from God. And yeah. So, you know, and that's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah,
I don't want to say anything else. I've said enough. Talking about it, I don't want to say any more, because if you haven't seen this, I'm mm-hmm. begging you. I know we've done this several times. This
yes. season,
asking people, please go watch this, but seriously, I'm begging people to go watch this movie.
If there was one movie I could recommend from this season, it would be this one.
Yes. Yes.
It's amazing. And two other quick little points as when in Predator 2, when he puts the bulletproof jackets over the car, that's such a Lethal Weapon thing.
It is. Like, oh, it is. When I saw that, that was the first thing I said. That was a Lethal Weapon move.
Yeah.
When I saw him do that, 100%. Drive in there and turn the car.
Yes.
Except he's the Martin Riggs in this one.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
You know, it's instead of being Sergeant Murtaugh.
Exactly. So. And well, I also do love. God, is it 3 or 4? When he tells him to get down to his underwear.
Oh, I love all of them.
I
love so all. Good. Of them. They're all fantastic.
But also, I don't
separate the artist from the art.
Yes. We have to do that.
But I will live and die on the hill of Lethal Weapon. I would still watch another one if they would make it, but they'd have to be in like wheelchairs.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're getting too old for this shit.
They're way past too old for this shit, which is so funny because when you watch the first one and he's supposed to be turning 50.
Yeah.
Right. And he's going to retire and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, and he, at the time, he wasn't even 50. The dude was like 35.
I was going to say he's probably younger than me. Yeah.
And then they made 3 more. And I'm like, what? Hey, I'm not buying that. I'm too old for this shit anymore.
Last thing I was going to say is I haven't seen Predator Badlands yet. And
it's good.
I don't know how you feel about animation and things like that. But Predator Killer.
Oh, it's
Killers.
It's amazing.
So good.
And again, that was so good too. And I'm, you know, and I was skeptical. I thought, you know, but it turned out to be really great.
It's
and
so
it was
awesome.
Very along the lines of Predators though.
Okay. You know,
because they gathered for the hunt, you know?
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, that is, it is very good.
So if anybody's into the Alien Predator universe and stuff, check out, I guess, both of these, but yeah.
Predator, well, and Killer Prey. Killers,
Prey is so fucking good.
So good.
Really,
I always tell everybody, you've got to watch that. Just make sure when you watch it, it's on Hulu, but and make sure you watch it in the indigenous language. Don't watch it dubbed.
No.
Watch it in the original, like Sioux, Lakota.
Yeah.
And with the subtitles, because it's so much cooler that way.
I didn't even know they had a dubbed version, but you and I are very much subs over dubs. Like we've landed on that.
Yeah, I'm good with that. So
anyway, okay. Whew. Well, I don't have any Ghostwriter stuff.
Well, and I've only got a couple of texts. So
let's do it. Let's move on.
Yeah, if anybody's got anything else you want to text us about, you may want to do that in the next 2 weeks, because our last episode will be our end of the year movie thing. And I will read the last texts we have. For the year, but then we'll probably, you know, start with a clean slate when the new season kicks
off. I think that sounds right.
But let me read a couple that I've got here. This one comes to us from the 405. Oh, I guess I should say, if you are interested in texting us, you can do that on the haunt line, and that's 217-791-7859. As I said, the first one comes to us from the 405, and it says, "Hey, Troy and Cody, I got behind on episodes because I'm going back to college, and the first semester was brutal, LOL." And I thought, I'll bet.
I mean, yeah.
You should know, though, I'm subscribed and have alerts on. Spotify has not been alerting me of new episodes.
What the hell, Spotify?
I know, Spotify. So also, thank you for the show. It's well-researched and makes me less doubtful of my own experiences with the paranormal.
Oh.
So that was a nice one. And then this one comes to us from the 314. That's so St. Louis area. It says, "Happy Thanksgiving to you guys." So just pretty recent.
Yeah.
I want to touch base. I mentioned a friend of mine made a movie called Mark of the Werewolf that's now on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
So we should check that out. Also to Troy, my friend Ken Rawmuller, I hope I pronounce Ken's name because I've known him for years, says hello. He said he sort of knows you. I've known him for, I don't even know, 25 years.
Oh, okay, come on.
I mean, he's an acquaintance. He's a good dude, though.
All right,
and I support it. You're a great guy. And I would say the same thing about Ken. Anyway, but he says, "Hey, I just finished listening to the Hitcher Billy Cook episode. And you started talking about the rental VHS because of the haunt line."
Yeah.
You
know,
yeah, we did. We did like about a half hour chunk.
Yeah, that, we did. I learned a lot.
It was fun. Anyway, it jogged a memory this time to watching Twister with Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton on VHS rental the first time. The Twister at the drive-in part of the movie ticked me off for about 30 seconds when it goes from black to dropping on the drive-in screen where Danny is riding his big wheel through the halls in The Shining. I thought some asshole recorded The Shining over the movie and didn't realize it was still Twister till it cut to the couple on the car. The movie label always covered where that tab was to prevent the recording over the tape. Right.
Right.
It lives rent-free in my memory as being one of the biggest anger to happy moments in my life. Rental stores were the best hangouts too. So I would agree with that as well.
I love all that.
But yeah, I'd forgotten about the tabs. Because that's how, you know, you pop those. If you wanted to keep something you recorded, you pop that piece out, that tab out of there. Then that way it couldn't be recorded over.
Because we'd put a piece of tape over it, I think.
But you could record over, like, you know, tapes you bought or got from a video store, as people regrettably did sometimes.
Yeah.
By just putting tape over.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you could record over.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah, there were a lot of instances of people recording, let's just say, homemade films on children's movies and then taking them back to the store.
Good job, guys. Good.
That was
job.
A thing, you know, at the time that went around.
Good job. So, terrible.
Yeah, people. Not exactly one of the finer moments of humanity there.
People are monsters. Yeah. Yep.
But
that's amazing.
Yeah, but that was something else. But we got to stop.
I
cannot get on to another VHS honk here.
not maybe next time.
No. Maybe another time. Yeah, we can always talk about it next time when we do our
doesn't matter.
Movie episode. Right. Exactly. So anyway. All right, buddy, you want to wrap this thing up?
Yep, let's do it. I'm ready.
All right. So, guys, thanks again for checking out the story and the postmortem for this week's episode. We hope you love the show. And if you do, we hope you'll share it with your friends, family, strangers, even people you meet on the street. Encourage them to listen and, you know, if you get a chance, leave us a review somewhere. Hopefully a good one, because it makes it easier for people to find us. And don't forget that as an American Haunties listener, you can use the discount code podcast for 10% off any books, tours, or events you purchase from our online store. Because, well, we're more than just this podcast and the other three podcasts that we do. We're also books, tours, ghost hunts, events, the Haunted America Conference, and the American Oddities Museum. You can find everything about us on the website at AmericanHauntings.net.
All right. Well, this episode of the American Hauntings podcast was written and narrated by Troy Taylor and was produced and edited by me, Cody Beck, for the last time this season. No, not quite. Yep. But sort of.
Well, pretty close. I mean, this is the season finale technically because the next episode is kind of a bonus.
Yeah, I really won't edit that one. I'll just be like,
we just kind of do our thing. Yeah.
To find out more about the show, check out the show notes or go to our website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com. If you want to find out more about the podcast, you can reach us via email.
Are you waiting till the new season starts? Have you put anything up about the other shows on there?
You know what? I started to, and thanks for calling me out in front of everybody.
Sorry.
I've been moving.
I just was curious.
I'm so tired.
That's right. Well, I know you have been.
That's
why I wondered. Just
these next couple weeks, though, Troy, everything's going to be so revamped. Our podcast is going to look like an Apple store.
I'll take your word for it.
If you want to find out more about the podcast, I just set the bar way too high for myself.
Too high.
Reach us via email by texting the hotline, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thanks for listening. We couldn't and definitely wouldn't do it without you. So until next time, goodbye.
So long.
See you later.
See you later.
All right.
Cool.
I think that was...